welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears. I'm here with my favorite and regular worms. Hi, Lance and Lulu.
Good evening.
Hi, everybody.
Good to be back this Wednesday and super excited to be joined by two fabulous guests, Abby Anderson and Rita Hennigan of Uproot, Colorado, right here in the studio with us.
Yeah, right.
Hi, ladies.
Hello. Hi. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, our pleasure. Really excited to learn about Uproot, Colorado. And I think it's going to be a great discussion. And I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. 970-527-4868-866, KVNF Now, worm at kvnf.org. And it really is a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
So we get to have a conversation with the uproots.
Yeah, we're going to
we get to uproot
their brains tonight.
Yeah. This is so fun. I just love this project.
So we want to hear all about Uproot Colorado. I'm just going to say one of your missions that you're dedicated to is increasing the nutritional security of Coloradans. That's big.
Bam.
I mean, that is,
you know, mic drop. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about how you do that and what Uproot Colorado is. Abby, you are local here in Paonia.
Yes.
And Rita, you are from Carbondale and general director of what's happening.
Yes. So I am one of the co-directors of Uproot, and I live in Carbondale and help with our programs across the Western Slope.
Okay, and Abby right here in Paonia helping to carry out, are you like the boots on the ground type of person?
Yes, yeah, I am kind of doing a double role these days as the Delta County Gleaning and Food Systems Coordinator, as well as the gleaning program manager for Uproot statewide.
Okay, so gleaning and food systems, it sounds like we're going to be distributing a lot of food and taking it from local farms.
Yes.
Generally how you guys operate?
It is, yep. Mm-hmm. So we, our mission is not only to increase the nutrition security of Coloradans, but specifically to do so through the harvesting and redistribution of surplus agricultural crops across Colorado. So fruits and vegetables that may not otherwise be harvested, sold, or eaten from agricultural settings across the state. And another part of our mission is also to support the resilience of farmers in doing that. So Abby, if you want to talk a little bit more about kind of what gleaning is and how we do that work, that would be awesome.
Yeah, and it's kind of different in each region. So here in my experience here in Delta County is we work with kind of two general groups of folks. Some are commercial farms who end up having surplus because they've perhaps sold what they can to their markets. They're moving on to the next crop. They don't have the labor or the time or a market to get to the next crop. So they might call us up to come in and bring our volunteer crew in for a harvest. Also, we just sometimes work with, as we all know here in the North Fork Valley and its fruit history, we have a lot of folks who have moved on to properties that had that have orchards that were once commercial or part of the co-ops in the area, and they don't have a market. They're just a lovely homeowner who really wants to share and make sure that their food gets to folks who can use it. So sometimes we're harvesting from old historic orchards that are on properties around town. And then we also have gardeners like Lance who will connect with us to drop off beautiful leaves of spinach and things like that that helps to supplement what we're harvesting ourselves.
A lot of food out there is what I'm hearing.
This year, for sure.
Yeah, this year.
Well, I'm just going to speak to, people that move on to an old property in these historic orchards and some of the apple trees that you see in just the orchards around town that aren't being, worked regularly. They're just full of apples.
Yeah, that's me. I look bad. My apples are all over the street.
You need a gleaner.
But that's okay because there's still plenty up there and people have been coming by and grabbing apples. There's plenty that are on the ground that are perfectly edible, which is what gleaning is. Mm-hmm. It's picking it up from, I remember people gleaning after the potato machine went through the potato field, and it would always miss some, and you could just go in there and get them.
Yeah, I think there's a long history of
allowing that. Yeah, they did that with the onion fields too. But they're not growing that much potatoes and onions right now. So.
Yeah, actually that's an interesting point is here in the north, in each region there's kind of like a different type of produce that's more common, like in the Front Range, Boulder and Denver, the area, they're doing a lot more vegetable greens. Usually their fruit is from homeowners' backyard fruit trees, a couple trees in someone's yard. Around here, we are just pretty much focused on these larger orchards, and we're getting more and more folks interested in sharing their fruit, which is amazing. And we also have a lot fewer opportunities for vegetables. So that's something that we're kind of like hoping to connect with more farms who do have surplus veggies to sort of add some varieties of nutrients to the pantries and other nutrition security outlets that we deliver to.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that, both in the North Fork and just in general in this region?
So Uproot was started in 2017 in Carbondale and Boulder. That's where we got our start. Our co-founders are from those two regions, and we're connected to the agricultural communities in those parts of Colorado. And so we've been gleaning since 2017. We expanded our gleaning program into Delta County, and we're able to hire Abby as our gleaning and food systems coordinator that year in 2021.
Mm-hmm. All right. So
that's so cool.
Critical time period.
Right. So how do people get compensated? Do the farmers or the people that are getting gleaned? Is that how it goes?
First of all, I think we should incorporate that you've been gleaned.
That's pretty fun.
Is there a method of compensation for them, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, because often, each farmer or each situation is very different in terms of how folks might want to be compensated. But one thing that Uproot does offer as a nonprofit is a donation receipt that often helps it. Sure. It helps certain producers at tax time to kind of increase the value. We basically kind of give them, we write the value of pounds. We keep track of everything that we harvest, everything that we distribute, and then they get to fill in the value of that produce that they donated. So it helps them out a little bit there.
Perfect.
But I will share that we don't compensate farmers directly for the crops that they are donating to us. So really, it is an act of generosity on the part of the farmers and orchardists with
whom
we work.
That's even better. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just being a part of this great system, and a tax incentive is always good.
It's always nice to have. But it's what's really good is you're just providing nutritious food to people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming right off the land that you live on. That's really important.
And we've been blown away by the generosity of folks who would just really want to just make sure they've taken time to care for this fruit. They value it themselves. And it's tough to just see that, not find a home in some ways. So it's just so delightful to see how many folks are seeking us out even to make sure that their food gets shared.
That's awesome.
And how do people get in touch with you? I mean, what are the requirements for that? And do they just look you up online, or let's say I have, five or six apple trees or a couple big mamas in my backyard?
That's what I call my apple tree, big mama. She's old, baby. She's beautiful.
Lovely. Yes, they can get in touch with, if you're in Delta County, you can get in touch with me directly. Abby, it's ABBEY at uprootcolorado.org. And I have my phone number listed on the website as well, so you can just Google up Uproot if you can't remember that email address. And what are the other ways?
I think, we've got like a form on our website where someone can request that we schedule glean, but I don't know how often that it's been utilized on occasion, but I think more often than not, it is, we have a presence in the community through a staff person and are out at different events. We try to participate in different agricultural events or groups in different parts of the state so that we are meeting and connecting with and building relationships with producers across the state. And I think that's how most of our gleaning starts, is through the building of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the research station.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
Yeah, I met Lance at the research station tabling there with our bit. You may have seen our giant vehicle around town. It's called the Glean Machine. It's the most muralized van in town.
Oh, cool.
Parked near the Learning Council currently. But yeah, so we are out tabling, and that's mm-hmm. really a great way. We've made so many connections that way, and just keep building. The community just keeps growing and growing, and it's just it's a wonderful position to be in, both personally and as an organization, to see specifically the response in the North Fork Valley to our work and people wanting to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Does any of the gleaning stuff go to the schools? Are school lunchers ever beneficiaries of that? Project?
We did. That's a good question about the school lunches. But last year we were donating a little bit to some local elementary schools. We haven't. That's something on my list to make a bit more of a connection school wise. Are there other things going on the other side of the state?
No, I think we haven't really formalized partnerships with schools, because one thing about gleaning is that it is not very predictable in its nature.
Exactly.
And so it is, I think, one of our strengths as an organization, that we're able to be responsive to producers with very quick turnaround times. And so a farmer typically doesn't anticipate that they're going to have a surplus. And so when they do, they need to turn that crop over fairly quickly in many cases. And we're able to organize groups to come out and harvest that food with a fairly quick turnaround. But that doesn't work particularly well, for example, the menu planning that needs to happen in school cafeterias.
Right. So what's your distribution strategy then? Because you're caught in this need to respond sort of situation. How do you get that out to the community and those in need?
So similarly to how we conduct outreach and build partnerships and relationships with producers, we do the same thing with hunger relief organizations across the state. So food banks, food pantries, but also a more diverse array of organizations than that, and folks who have different sorts of programs that serve people who are experiencing nutrition insecurity and who need greater access to fresh foods.
Right.
Yeah, so fresh food is, you know, the hardest thing to deal with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got to move it right now.
We try to connect the proper glean with the proper outlet, and sometimes it's multiple outlets. But so if we have a small, say, for instance, tomorrow, I'll be leading a strawberry and raspberry glean, believe it or not, here in October. Mm-hmm. And because they're such delicate, beautiful little fruits, mm-hmm. it takes a while to harvest, even if we have a handful of volunteers. So we end up with one cooler full of berries. So for that, I like to deliver that locally. Either we've delivered to the senior center or to the Somerset pantry, where those berries just make a bit more of a splash. And for instance, when we're collaborating with the research center, which we do sometimes, to help with their large apple harvests and things like that, we will call up the food bank and organize a week in advance for them to come out and pick up all this food on pallets. So we'll palletize everything or put them in the big apple gaylords. Mm. And so it's really kind of just depends on how much we're harvesting at a time, and just getting that to the right outlet that can distribute it further if needed, or keep it as local as we can when that makes sense.
That's amazing. Holy That's a lot damn. Of logistics.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I say that gleaning is like, it's kind of like being a wedding coordinator somewhere for food. You're just coordinating volunteers, the hunger relief outlets, the transportation.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I can see where your connections just would develop into this whole network of, you know who to call, you know where this should go, and just all these people working together that can pull that off. Mm-hmm.
Telling you, I'm
we're dumbfounded.
I'm pretty good at organizing stuff, but this is blowing me away. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good idea.
Yeah,
I mean, wow, what a good idea.
And I'll add that it is also very fun. So, like, at the Gleans,
of course it is.
It just like makes my heart grow five sizes larger every time I attend a glean. And the volunteer, shout out to our volunteer base here in the North Fork and across Colorado. Just some of the most dedicated, fun-loving, delightful humans that show up time and time again. Usually if someone comes to a glean once, they're there at least another couple times in the summer. We try to keep them short and manageable so that it's not like spending an entire day harvesting, you know, one thing. It's like 2 to 3 hours a morning or an afternoon, and we try to take kind of like a little educational break in the middle of it so that we can share a little bit more about our food system at large, because we're finding that you know, getting folks onto farms and experiencing just that a particular surplus is really helpful and educational. But to kind of tie that into what's happening, you know, nationwide, and kind of learning a little bit more about the systems in place and many aspects of the food world beyond just what we're doing that day, it really helps our volunteer base feel this cohesion about what they're doing, that they're contributing to something larger than just
a picking. bigger
yeah.
picture.
Yeah, so exactly.
I'm curious, have you done nutrition studies on any of the food?
Oh.
I'm just curious.
So we haven't yet, but that's something that our colleague Dave would be very excited to talk to you about. If he were here, he would be very excited. But he's
Maybe
aware
Dave
of this.
Can call.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, if Dave
Give
is listening.
Give us a call, Dave.
Call
Dave. 970-527-4868 or 1-KVNF now or KVNF.org. Yeah.
I don't know if we notified him that we were going to be speaking. But anyways, Dave, if you're out there, give us a call. But anyways, he is familiar with and connected to an organization in central Massachusetts, where I'm actually originally from, mm-hmm. called the Bionutrient Food Association.
Wow.
Are you familiar with them? So they are really honing in on the nutrient density of mm-hmm. food and have a way to measure it. And I think Dave was talking with their founder or director at some point about, you know, could we start measuring the nutrient density of the food that we're harvesting, if this is what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Am I on the right track, Lance? So we haven't done that yet, which has largely been kind of a capacity issue. You know, mm-hmm. we're focused on all of these other logistics that we've been talking about. But I think as we grow, that's something that we would be interested in learning more about, measuring, and sharing about, because the nutrient quality of the food that we are lucky to have access to, I would anticipate, is higher than the nutrient density of food that is coming from further afield or that you would get in the grocery store.
Some friends told me a story about they went to take one of my carrots and they put it in the microwave, sorry to say, and cooked it up, and it sparked like mad. Just the carrot sliced up. And they started, you know, they checked things out and they tried it again and it sparked like mad. And they started researching it, and with...
the carrot sparked?
The whole thing, the carrot sparked. And it turned out that when you got a high mineral content in your food, that's what happens in a microwave.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. And I want to talk more about that. But we've got a caller on the line. Bill wants to join our conversation.
Great.
Good evening, Bill.
Hey, good evening. And here's why I came in on this. I wanted to... food distributions into the schools. That's a pet project of my life. And the problem that comes up invariably is you have to put food in there. You've got to get somebody's permission, the principal or something. Every single one of them will defer to the school district. And the reason that they defer to it is that if all the stipulations aren't met in a school, then they... according to the National School Lunch Program in Colorado, then that cuts off the funding reimbursement from the state to the school. So it's kind of a counterproductive thing. We all want to get good food in, but when you try, it's prohibited by a dogma. And I just wanted to add that in. It seemed opportune that you've got listeners and you go to the schools and talk to the people and let them, you know, kick in on a grassroots basis.
Yeah,
that's
I like
I got.
That, Bill. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
And that's what's making me excited about talking with you, women, is that it does feel like there should be this swell, and I think there is a swell out there that needs attention.
I think it fits in with the whole regenerative farming techniques and... you know, big ag is always going to be there, thankfully. You know, it's why we haven't had a famine ever, or really. And, yeah, but it's really, this is a good idea.
Yeah, it's great. And I like this nutrient density thing because it does go into having that data, just educating people even more so, because there is a disconnect about what really good food is.
Right, and I think we get so wound up in our busy lives, and you know, and it's and everything's got to be convenient. You know, you go mm-hmm. so you go to the grocery store. It's convenient. You don't have to. you don't have to come in here looking like Liz and me, who've been in the gardens all day.
Yeah.
And you know, and if you're a normal person, you don't do that anyway. So, you know, you have a job and you go to the store and you buy food. It's really important to start getting this to turn it around. To have more nutritional food.
And nutrient-dense food, if you're the people are eating that, you don't have to eat as much.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You will be full when, and you'll know it.
Yeah. Right. So. And how does that hook into the resiliency of our farmers?
Wow. A hush fell over.
Well, one thing I'll say is that, you know, on a small scale, and so this is, you know, kind of what we're looking toward the large scale, but really recognizing the power of the small scale, especially in communities like these. And so, you know, farmers are just up against a myriad, as we all know. It is tough to be a farmer. And we, as an organization, we can't claim to be, you know, supporting our farmers in a way that's, you know, financially helping them in that sense. But by bringing folks onto their farms, we are connecting them to a customer base. Some farmers we work with report that they've seen those folks that came to a glean at the farmer's market purchasing their produce later on. And just making folks more aware of their own food systems in the valley. So that's been something we've tangibly seen as a result of this work.
Yeah, yeah, it's like championing that farmer that's bringing us yeah. these nutrients yeah. of life.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. That's what I was trying to say. Is you know this is really tightening the circle of the whole thing.
And also, Rita, I wanted to ask you about also as an organization, we've been not me personally, but other members, including Rita, have been. Members of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union and have been participated in that way to lend a voice on kind of behalf of our own experience.
Yeah, we are very proud partners of Rocky Mountain Farmers Union and members from the very beginnings of Uproot. So Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, if you're not familiar with it, is a nonpartisan grassroots agricultural advocacy organization. So it organizes members who are agriculturalists or friends of agriculturalists like ourselves. I think that's the way I like to describe myself, as a friend to agriculturalists. But it organizes members across the Rocky Mountain region is defined as Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, and the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union is a chapter of the larger National Farmers Union organization. So they're organizing farmer members across the country to inform policy at state and federal levels that will benefit our agricultural production systems. So we have participated in that group in various ways. Many of us are, by us I mean the Uproot staff members, are members of our local chapters. And then we have also participated in the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union Fellows Program, many of us, which is a program that trains folks who are passionate about small scale and family agriculture and teaches them about how through the Farmers Union we can organize and have an influence on state and federal level policy. So most recently, our gleaning and food systems coordinator, Emily, who's in Boulder, participated as a fellow, and she just participated in the Farmers Union fly-in last month. So she and her other cohort members flew to DC and participated in advocating for policies that will benefit our farm partners.
I love it. Partnerships and connections and, you know, it's community coming together is what it is. It's agricultural. I like this Friends of Agriculturalists. That'd be a good club.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, it's so... just to have people in the garden is getting food out of I don't know. This has been my thing all my life, you know, is I want to go out to the garden and grab a bean and eat it, you know.
And even for folks who aren't necessarily inclined to be directly politically active in a sense of going to D.C., one of my personal favorite ways of being an activist is through celebration. So celebration to me is just like if we make sure our volunteers who come are taking home some of the produce, we ask them to enjoy it with their families, but also to potentially share it with folks that they might think of in their lives. And if you can taste the quality of something that you've picked yourself and sharing it with someone else, it just sort of elevates the importance and the need for this element in our world. So I think, yeah, there's a place for everyone to make a difference through food, and even in a small way by sharing and celebrating your food.
I was wondering what, you know, are you getting lots of gardeners doing it, helping out? I mean, donating stuff, or is it just the farmers?
Good question. We do have a few gardeners like yourself donating, but it tends to be mostly working on gleans or pickups, larger pickups from farms. We did just recently run an event with our office mates, Colorado Farm and Food Alliance, and they we orchestrated a drop off your garden produce day, and we might try to do one more of those before the frost that might be this weekend. But where home gardeners can bring their surplus in. But typically our work so far has been primarily with larger producers.
Call me because I don't do the internet.
Okay, you got it.
And I will say that one of the reasons that we've chosen to focus on gleaning from farms and orchards in particular is because it does provide us with that opportunity to connect our volunteers to the local food system. Whereas if we were focused more on backyard garden harvests, there's less of an opportunity to invite people to participate in that act. It's more, you know, the gardener lets us know, or lets, you know, some entity that wants to organize that sort of surplus recovery know, I've got a surplus, and then it's delivered, and maybe one person is involved. But whenever we can, we try to create opportunities for as many members of the community as possible to participate with our events. Because as we've been talking about, I think that that is a really powerful piece of gleaning. And often it can be the least tangible or the most difficult to measure or report on, which is a lot of what my work entails, fundraising to support our work at Uproot. But despite the fact that it's maybe the least tangible or measurable, I think it's one of the most powerful pieces of what we do.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would agree. You know, I think there's an opportunity there for people that want to be involved in the community to volunteer, and that opportunity for new folks in the Valley to really connect to what's happening here by participating in a glean and being out there on a farm.
Yeah.
And we know from Worms on the Road that when you go out there and are experiencing what people are doing, you're amazed by it.
Yeah.
Totally.
And deepens your connection to the Valley and to your community, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, and you are what you eat. I mean, that's an old cliche, isn't it? But there you go. You know, are you connected to the earth, to the ground, to the support systems, the whole ecosystem, you know, that brings you your life every day, to get more in touch with that and realize that it's okay to have spiders, it's okay to have, you know, these things that a lot of people think, no, you need it all.
Yeah, you know? Connection to what's natural is...
Like those voles that are eating my carrots?
Filthy.
Just a little bit.
You but need it there. All.
Filthy.
They're there.
Voles.
Speaking of ecosystems, did you all know that there is a national gleaning, or an association of gleaning organizations nationwide?
No.
A group of folks that have different types of gleaning organizations in different states that actually get together once a year at a symposium, a gleaning symposium around the country. And we've been actively involved in that for a number of years, which has been very fun.
I'll add it's the International Gleaning Symposium because I think there are some Canadian members, maybe.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Awesome.
And it really is a global issue for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it is. If you're a person, you're going to eat. If you're going to eat, you might as well eat well or good or better, best.
And,
you know, just hook it up. So you realize what really supports life. This is what has always been one of my deals. You know, what really supports life? What do you need to support life?
Right. And that fact, and I think it's in your literature, access to healthy food is a basic human right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A basic human right, and one to which too many people currently are not currently afforded that right.
Absolutely. There's a big issue. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that after we take a quick break and hear from a couple of our underwriters. It's Abby Anderson and Rita Hennigan from Uproot Colorado joining us. We'll be right back. Are back. You're listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF. I'm your host, Jill Spears, here with Lance and Lulu, and our special guests, Abby and Rita from Uproot, Colorado. The phone numbers are 527-486-8866, KVNF now, worm@kvnf.org is the email. And give us a ring and join our conversation. These ladies are talking about some super important work happening in the world right now, coming right here from Paonia, Carbondale, local.
Yeah, it's what's the number of, or the percentage of food that goes to waste?
So in the United States, it's estimated that between 30% and 40% of the food that's produced here ends up going uneaten.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a statistic that has shocked and upset me from when I first heard it, because there's so much that is invested in the production of our food, from land resources, water, fuel that's used both on the farm and then to transport the food from where it's grown to where it's consumed. There's just so much that is invested into the production of food that is all used in vain when the food is not eaten.
Yeah, and what's the average miles from food to, from farm to plate?
Oh,
I don't know the answer to that.
1,500 miles.
1,500.
Oh. Yeah, that's average. Wow. The food travels
from
the farm to the plate. And I don't know if they're considering bananas and pineapples and that kind of stuff, but it's about 1,500 miles.
Mm. Well, holy cow. So, yeah, you're filling a big gap. That's unbelievable.
So when we talk about kind of that 30 or 40% of food that goes to waste, I often try to highlight as well that that happens at all points along the food supply chain. Mm-hmm. And at Uproot, we're directly addressing the amount that happens on farms. So there's food surplus that happens on farms. There's food that gets wasted or lost in manufacturing, and then at retail businesses, grocery stores, restaurants.
Yeah, there's a lot of holes. There's a lot of places where it could, go south.
Exactly. Yeah. And then households are also kind of the other end of that supply chain. And I think it's important to highlight that most of the food that gets wasted or lost or that is surplus along the food supply chain is happening in our households, not on farms and not in manufacturing or at the retail facing businesses. About half of all of that 30 to 40% is happening in our households, is food waste that is happening by individuals who are, you know, not eating leftovers or forgetting about some food in the back of the fridge and just throwing it away. So that's something I like to highlight, because while we're directly addressing at Uproot the agricultural surplus, we're also trying to indirectly address the downstream food waste, so the food waste that's happening at the individual level, by educating people about that fact, teaching them about the extent of food loss and waste in our society and the environmental impacts of all of that, and hopefully inspire folks to be more mindful or creative about how they can make sure that less of that food is going to waste in their homes.
That is so excellent. I love it. Because I think it ties into how people eat. And I think when they eat a lot of convenience factor food, you shop differently than you do if you go down to the Arbor Market every Tuesday. Yeah. So it lends itself to having more food in your refrigerator, where when you're eating fresher and you're eating more nutrient-dense food, you don't buy that same volume of food, and you can't buy it because it's going to spoil. So your shopping habits change. It's just a different way of thinking about it. That's part of it, I think.
It, when you really start to think about it, it's amazing that there's a food chain at all, a food supply system. No, I'm serious as a heart attack. I mean, because think about it. You know, it's got to, it, what you just said, Jill, about trends. You know, how are we eating? What's the latest trend? And why is it a trend? Is it from convenience? Is it from overabundance of corn because the corn crop was huge? Or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. Well, if you spend a little time in Europe and you're going to cook over there, you go down and buy fresh food. You buy a loaf of bread and you know, some salad and you bop down there. Sausage. And you're part of the community, and it's that whole connection thing happening again.
And another thing about that is changing your diet through the seasons.
Sure. And then there's going with what's
You know, a simple thing is the only time I eat spinach is spring and fall, because that's when it's fresh. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, come winter, it's root crops and cabbage and kale and, you know, that kind of stuff. So you just change it around. And grains you can eat year-round because you don't need any energy to store it.
Right.
It's just there.
We actually had an interesting connection with that is an educational event that Uproot put on this past spring in the North Fork. So in addition to doing gleaning events, usually when the season's a little slower at different times of the year, we can fit in one or two special events. In this case, we collaborated with Thistle Whistle Farm with Mark Waltermeyer, who we all love in this valley. And we have done an event with him every year, the last 3 years, where we kind of highlight one element of his farm and tie it in with something that we're kind of trying to promote. And so in this case, it was at-home food waste. And the event was called Eat Shoots and Leaves, a Raising the Salad Bar for a Brighter World. And
that's awesome.
We did this in the spring. So when he had very few of the major kind of crops that you might imagine at his farm stand. Mm-hmm. And so there were some interesting spring, you know, herbs and greens and not a wide variety, but a lot of certain things. So we put them all in bowls in front, and we divided everyone up into teams, and folks had to brainstorm what they thought a salad even was, so that we came up with some pretty fun examples of what makes a salad. But beyond that, they had a task of creating different dishes out of these minimal produce pieces, as we were also talking about kind of the greater food waste scenario across the nation. And it was just such joy. I think that goes back to my proclivity towards celebrating as a way of like, you know, creating a better world. And so it was fun for the to see what the volunteers came up with in terms of creative ways to use things, only eating what's growing. Even some weeds, quote unquote, weeds showed up there, you know, and those were turned into delicious pestos and dressings. And it was just so much fun.
Yeah. That's great. You mentioned educational aspects of what you do. What other types of educational offerings do you have?
So I would say, first and foremost, just the act of bringing folks onto farms in and of itself is educational, and we are proponents of experiential education. So, you know, bringing folks out so they can learn by doing through harvesting and be reminded by doing that farming is incredibly hard work and something that needs to be valued much more highly societally than it currently is. So gleaning in and of itself creates educational experiences for our volunteers, and Abby has really been helping us to kind of formalize some of the educational components at Glean. So providing training to our staff across the state so that we're always making time to pause and talk about why we've been invited to glean a particular crop at a particular farm, to educate folks about the challenges that farmers are facing and the reason for surplus in the first place. Because the best case scenario would be farmers are able to sell all that they grow because that supports their economic resilience. Mm-hmm. And too often our farmers who are providing this absolutely essential foundational service can struggle themselves to make ends meet, which is just so backwards. So trying to educate people about these systemic issues within our food system and inspire people to do what each of us can to work towards a food system in which that's not the case. So beyond gleaning, we also have started offering some fruit tree pruning educational series up in the Roaring Fork Valley, where we work with a lot of backyard fruit tree stewards, we call them. And we actually shifted the way that we refer to folks who steward fruit trees thanks to a recommendation from a volunteer a few years back. I think we used to say, you know, the fruit tree owners that we work with, but now we've shifted to fruit tree stewards because it better represents how we feel about being in relationship with our food and food system. We don't own the natural world. We are, you know, stewards of it, and that is our responsibility. So anyways, our fruit tree stewards in the Roaring Fork Valley, we noticed, you know, have also, like you described, Abby, kind of moved on to properties where there were historical orchards and just noticed that there was a need for greater knowledge on fruit tree maintenance as we've been gleaning backyard fruit trees. And so the past two seasons, we've collaborated with Vanessa Harmony at Colorado Edible Forest. It's an edible native plant nursery up in the Roaring Fork Valley, as well as Drew Walters with Pitkin County and CSU Extension. And so we've collaboratively hosted fruit tree gleaning workshops up and down the Roaring Fork Valley. We've done 4 or 5 each spring, spanning from the western part to the eastern part of Garfield County in the Roaring Fork Valley. And those have been really well attended and popular. And also a great thing to flesh out our gleaning season. As Abby mentioned, there are times of the year where we're not actively harvesting surplus crops as much. And so we're kind of figuring out how can we supplement the harvest season with year-round education.
Beautiful.
The pruning workshops also kind of help another element of our work, which is to make sure that we're distributing super high quality selected fruits and vegetables, in this case fruit, from trees that are not entirely full of coddling moth and things like that. So the pruning and the maintenance, kind of encouraging that, really helps what we are able to deliver to our hunger relief or our nutrition security outlets. And that is something, as part of our work, we do make sure a lot of our events involve a lot of sorting, because we might be harvesting from trees that do have some, you know, sometimes it's cosmetic defects, which we're not as concerned about. But if it's, you know, coddling moth and other things like that, we try to make sure that the food that we're bringing into our outlets looks beautiful and is an exciting thing for folks to receive there, not to make them feel like they're getting the kind of the bottom of the barrel.
Right, yeah. Right. That's so important to that whole food security issue and the dignity of that. I think that's amazing.
Right, but I still, but also, coddling moth gets such a bad rap, but I like the idea that it's supporting the environment beyond just humans and the food that we eat, and that it's, you know, Lance just said, who's eating your carrots? The voles?
The whole foals.
Yeah, the voles. You know, and so you bring in the awareness that a good garden, if you're having a fabulous garden, you're going to have a certain amount of pests and other things, but it all supports the whole. If you have more coddling moths, for instance, maybe the bats will start to come back, because there's a big movement to try and get that to happen right now. There's going to be a lot of caves that are closed so that the bats can hibernate in peace and this kind of thing. And it just closes a loop, sort of, you know, it just kind of brings it all together, having the awareness of what a garden does, not just for us, but for all the other creatures that are out there.
That's a conversation we've been having in the Roaring Fork Valley this year, as well as the bears' food source was affected by a late frost in our part of the state. So we are sort of in competition with the bear population for fruit. And that's a conversation that my colleague up in Silt and I have had this year. Like, are we taking fruit that should be left for the bears. And so we do try to, when the fruit tree steward is amenable to it, you know, leave some that we're not going to be distributing to hunger relief organizations for the bears to eat. Mm-hmm. But also fruit is an attractant for bears, and human-bear conflicts often end badly for the bear.
Yeah, I think I just heard a story on KVNF in the Front Range where they were having volunteers glean some individual properties to keep the bear-human interaction down because of that attractant. So, yeah, that was just whole balance of everything.
Well, this human is aware of the bears because I saw another big turd in the garden.
Why, I've seen it. Right outside. They are not chewing those apples very hard.
They're not. No. They go, that's true, right? It goes in one end and out. Oh, well. Yeah, but that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're aware of it, you know, so... You go out at night, you make sure you've got your headlamp on and, you know, you just look around a little more, just be a little more aware of your surroundings.
Well, I'm lucky enough that I actually have a canyon on the property, and I take all that fruit and it goes down that I'm not going to use. That's old and rotten. Mm-hmm. And I've seen turkeys in there. I've seen squirrels, marmots. This is really crazy. I went down there one morning with, I was having way too many apricots, and it was an apricot that I didn't like. It wasn't good flavored. And anyways, all these guys are down there, and here's the fox sitting on the rock over here just seeing which one it's going to get.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's, you know, I was almost like chumming for the...
Yeah, you got a honky-tonk happening in that little created a hot spot.
Yeah.
But that's it, you know. Then all the different creatures, everything starts to hopefully stay somewhat in balance, you know.
Yeah.
You sacrifice a few carrots to the voles, and
it's fine.
You know, maybe the bald eagle or the owl gets them or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, fox.
The fox, the feral cat that's in my yard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, one of them critters.
You know, you just go with the flow, let it roll, you know, and support all life.
Right. You gals are doing a great job of supporting life, supporting farmers, supporting just human beings. Tell us
and
how you...
And other beings.
And other beings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, supporting the system, the whole thing. How do you keep going? What's some of the fundraising that you do, and how can people donate to Uproot?
Thanks for asking. As we come into fundraising season now, this is something that we're going to be talking a little bit more about. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so we accept donations from community members and are hoping to increase the amount of support that we receive from individual donors who are able to give any amount, and any amount really does make a difference and allow us to support our work. Many of our costs are staff related, so supporting our gleaning and food systems coordinators across the state, because having those folks in place to build those trusting relationships with different stakeholders in the food system is really integral. And we are trying to take steps to better support our staff, to provide living wages, and we've added benefits for our staff position in the past couple of years in an attempt to create a more holistic support of our staff so that they want to stay on, and that benefits the program in the long run by allowing our staff to want to stay on with Uproot and have longevity in the role. And a phrase that, again, our colleague Dave has brought up recently is we need to move at the speed of trust in communities. And the concept of building trust with all these different folks is really foundational to the success of our program. So, all that to say, your donation will support our staff coordinating all of these logistics and building relationships with different producers and hunger relief organizations and volunteers in the community. We have some costs associated with the logistics. Increasingly, in the last couple of years, we've been adding some infrastructural components. So we have our first van, which Abby referenced earlier, that's got a fun mural painted on it. Also bought our first pickup truck, so we have our first two organizational vehicles, and there are costs associated with those, and then renting some storage spaces as well, which, Abby, if you want to talk a little bit more about storage, folks might be interested to know kind of how we incorporate that. But just to wrap up the fundraising spiel, You can make a donation to Uproot through our website, which is uprootcolorado.org. We'll also be participating in Colorado Gives Day, which is a statewide day of philanthropy coming up in early December. I believe it's December 10th this year. And so if you go to coloradogives.org, we have a page on there as well. So search Uproot Colorado. And if you'd make a donation in support of our Colorado Gives campaign, that would make a huge impact as well. So thanks for considering doing that if you're in a position to do so and interested in our work.
Great. Thanks you for sharing that. Abby, did you want to speak to the storage piece of what you do?
Yeah. And like Rita mentioned, the infrastructure element of our work is essential to us being able to reach more people, to harvest more food, to store more food longer so that we can kind of get it to folks over the course of time. We started with basically nothing in this town, and it has increased over the years. So we started with an office space, as we mentioned, shared with Colorado Farm and Food Alliance. But I was using my Mazda Protege to haul hundreds of pounds of apples. The axle bent on it. I had to get a new car. But in any case, like these, so that was kind of like the bare bones. And as we've grown, we have been so lucky to add elements of infrastructure. So we have dry storage. Now we can store lots of black plastic crates that are reusable, so we can harvest hundreds of pounds of things. We have boxes, we have pole pickers, we have ladders. These were all non-existent when I first started in Delta County. And then what a huge piece of the puzzle is cold storage. So we were looking for that for the first couple years of our existence here. And a big challenge was in our region, especially, you know, food pantries and things, their hours are very minimal and very limited, and you had to drive far away to get food to them. So if we harvested something, we had to line it up exactly with the open hours and the capability to transport it in something other than my Mazda Protege. And so now we through a collaboration with Western Colorado Research Center, Rogers Mesa, they have offered an entire fridge in their cold storage for us. We rent from them. And not only can we help distribute their produce easily through that way, but we can also store apples and produce and other tender items that needed to be in cold storage a little bit longer, and then be able to kind of think more thoughtfully and intentionally about where that food can go rather than trying to just get it out the door to whoever's open.
Right.
So that's made a big difference, having cold storage. And we're lucky in this region. Other regions don't have these kinds of infrastructures yet. They don't have vehicles. They're still having to make multiple trips in their small personal vehicles to get food to where it goes. So contributions will really help toward creating better infrastructure in other regions of our work across Colorado.
Ooh, I love to see how you have been growing and how this is all coming together and can only keep getting better.
Yeah, it's developing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming along nicely, actually.
One of the things I'm interested in is you say earlier that you measure your food by pounds. And so what do you project is the number of pounds of food that you have potentially redistributed?
Yeah, so we've been keeping track of that since Uproot's inception in 2017. And since that time, we have harvested and redistributed more than 400,000 pounds of surplus and nutrient-dense, locally grown fruits and vegetables.
Wow.
So we're proud of that and excited to build on it. Another thing I want to mention is that it's nutrient-dense food and fresh food is one of the most highly requested items by folks who utilize food pantries in Colorado. That's according to a survey that was conducted by one of the larger food banks in our state, Food Bank of the Rockies. So they were surveying people who utilize food pantries to get a sense of what they wanted so that the program could be more informed by the folks who utilize it.
Supply the need, yeah.
And so from that survey, they learned that fresh produce was actually the number one most highly requested item by people who are visiting food pantries to increase their nutrition security. So we're excited that those 400,000 pounds are of the food that is most desired by folks visiting Colorado food pantries.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah,
and
that's
thank
awesome.
You for what you do.
400,000 plus 400,000.
Wow. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And people can be a part of it. They can join in to glean. How do they volunteer?
Yes, volunteering. So the best way to mention that over the radio is just to look up our website, uprootcolorado.org. There is a button that will take you to our registration link, and or you can also kind of view what events we have happening across the state. So if there's an event coming up, it'll appear there no matter where you are, and you can select, oh, there's an event in Hotchkiss at this time, and you can actually register yourself that way. Or if you can certainly chat with me or email me, abby@uprootcolorado.org. And I'm around town, so happy to connect folks in our community with this endeavor.
All right, that's super. Sounds super fun. And there'll be a link to uprootcolorado.org on our podcast on KVNF, our homepage.
What's that?
It's computer lingo. Okay. Yeah, so you can go to kvnf.org and hook up with Uproot Colorado. Ladies, Abby Anderson and Rita Hennigan of Uproot Colorado, thanks for what you do, sharing your story, connecting farmers, stewardship, the human right to good food. You're doing a great thing, and it feels really good to have you here and really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight to be here.
Yes, thank you for having us. And also thanks to everyone who has participated in Uproot's work here in the North Fork and across the state, because that wouldn't be possible. The 400,000 pounds wouldn't be possible without the generosity and participation of lots of folks. So thanks to anyone listening who has been part of our program.
Wow. Awesome. Keep on building those connections and moving the world forward. Thank you so much for being here. It is Steve on Global Express coming up next. Lance Lulu, see you next week.
Okay. Have a good evening.
Thanks for listening.
Be kind, everybody.
You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and fast. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.